I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. The Toronto Real Asian International Film Festival celebrates 26 years. This year's festival is on now, from November 9th to the 20th. For the first time since 2019, the festival returns to full in-person screenings. The 2020 and 2021 festivals were mostly online due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Today, Real Asian's artistic director, Aram Collier, joined CGRU to discuss the festival's return, the curation process, and what audiences both in person and online can expect from this year's lineup.
Yeah, my name is Aram C.Y. Collier. I'm the artistic director at the Toronto Real Asian International Film Festival. I've worked in a couple of stints since 2005, but I think this is my 11th festival.
So right now for 2022, it's the first time since 2019 the festival's been fully in person. What does that mean for you?
It means a lot. I think one of the things is, you know, we talk about it to the point of it feeling like it's a cliche, but it is meaningful to be able to gather together, to be with others, especially when you're experiencing things that really resonate with the community. So for instance, you know, Rice Boy Sleeps on opening night. I had so many friends talk about how nice that was to watch that film and how much it resonated with them. And then the filmmakers too, you know, they were really curious how that film would play to a more, you know, a predominantly Asian Canadian audience. And they were just so happy with how the audience was responding to it in a way that was different than when they premiered at TIFF or when they showed at Busan.
Mm-hmm. So for this like return to full in person, how was the planning like? Because I know last year it was really only Martin and Trillin's Islands that we were able to have in person.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, it is a hybrid festival. So our second week is online, has online components. And so a number of the films are available online. So in that respect, you're actually planning two festivals. So we're kind of organizing the online portion as well as the in-person. So what's different, I guess, is that it's new. It feels new. And there is a bit of a lapse of trying to remember how things were done a few years ago. And then every festival from year to year, after being through 11 festivals now, you know, everything has a little bit of a tweak, right? And so getting back into person is a big deal. And then, you know, having to figure out, you know, what is going to keep audiences safe, what is going to keep them happy, and then just people's viewing practices. I mean, to be honest, I didn't know what to expect, how people would want to come back to theaters. And I guess it will take some time to figure out truly, you know, kind of where people's heads are at.
Mm-hmm. For this year, how has it been, like the enthusiasm or the people wanting to come back?
I think it's been good. I think the people who want to be here make it a point to come. I think people's options are always changing and growing. It's also a winter film festival, and for you know, even though we're Canadians, sometimes when that winter hits. that first week, it does tend to kind of make us want to shut in a little bit. But I think the enthusiasm has been there. I think people have been really engaged with the films. One of the producers of one of the films we showed, Rachel Suli, the producer's name is Sue Kim, you know, talked about how really appreciated how engaged the audience was and thought the discussion was really, really good. So, you know, I think it's about the qualitative experience, too, and not just, you know, ramming people into a theater.
It's interesting because I'd like to know also about the curation process for a lot of the films. Was there a particular theme you were looking for, or was there something that really kind of resonated with what you were seeing for the submissions?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that, you know, it's not really my personal practice to shoot for a theme. I just feel like sometimes you end up being disappointed or not finding what you want. I'd rather kind of like let things, you know, reveal themselves. And I think our documentary selection in particular, you know, films like Beyond Extinction, Free Chosu Lee, An Act of Worship are all films that cover a really long period of time. And, you know, I mean, that's not something new in documentary, but the ability to really showcase movements, ideas, characters who change over time was something that I really, really appreciated in a lot of documentary selection this year.
Mm-hmm. And you've also mentioned too, at the launch party, there's an introduction or there's an addition of 10 Asian Canadian films this year, I believe. Is that the most that's been for the festival?
Oh, by far, by far. I mean, it's one of these things that I think we've seen it in the last decade or so. More and more Asian Canadians are getting opportunities to make longer works. And that, you know, I've been around since 2005, and there would be times where we'd struggle to find one feature length film that was by an Asian Canadian. And so, you know, I think, you know, that may be due to different funding models. You know, you have Telefilm Talent to Watch program. You have more interest from streamers, Canadian streamers. You have, CBC and Crave, who are putting a little bit more money into diverse projects, and not just Asian Canadian, but BIPOC in general. So I think and I hope that this is a sign of more things to come and not an outlier. I guess we'll see. We'll see. I would also say that we had a lot of other Asian Canadian films that we just didn't have space for, and you hate to have that situation, but it's also a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm. And just getting to specifics here, there's one question I'm interested in is for the stories you've been there since 2005. So for the stories you're seeing between then and now from the Asian Canadian films, has there been a difference, or I guess like a different approach towards the first generation experience versus the second generation experience?
You know, I don't know that there has been that much change, to be honest. If I'm going to be completely frank, like I think on the positive side, I think Asian Canadian films often are trying new things, are experimenting. Something like Charlene Bamboat's documentary, If From Every Tongue It Drips, is really playing with form in multiple ways. But in other respects, I think, you know, we are in some ways bracketed by this idea of the immigrant experience, and we're not necessarily seeing second gen, third gen stories per se, as much as we might expect, or as much as I might expect, having been here, you know, since 2005. And so, you know, is that partially due to expectations in terms of what funders or audiences or perception of what Asian Canadian experience means? You know, I think that's a real question. And is there a space for kind of quote unquote lived experience Asian Canadian second, third generation that doesn't deal with immigration, that deals with other things? But I think that we are still in that kind of first generation experience. I mean, I think that partially that is because it is a very strong narrative in this country, and a truthful one too for these people, for the creators. And so it's you know, it lends itself to drama as well, right?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to know more also something again you said at the launch party, where what you just said reminded me of that different type of representation right now for Asian Canadians. And can you just elaborate more when you said like it is so important for the different communities that are represented here in the films?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think we on the programming team and as an organization find it, obviously representation is important, being seen, those kinds of things. I think it's important to push the dialogue a little bit beyond that. It's not just about seeing faces. It's not just about the look, right? Or the appearance of somebody. It's about what is that story? What is that creator trying to do with that story? How are they pushing the form, the narrative forward, the dialogue about this experience, whether it's first generation, third generation, you know, other forms of identity. I think it's really important that we are looking at perspectives and the creative process and the craft of it. So, you know, I'm interested when I talk to somebody like Anthony Shim from Rice Boy Sleeps, I'm interested not only in, you know, the content of a you know, first generation experience, but I want to know how he chose to make the film, right? What are the craft elements in it that that bring that home, that add extra meaning to it? And so, you know, a lot of our conversations that we had, you know, focus on the craft side of things.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, given that we are a Toronto-based radio station, are there any Toronto-based projects you'd like to give a shout out to?
Yeah. So Renika Jayapalan's Stay the Night, it's like super rooted in Toronto. It's you know, stars Andrea Bang, who's this kind of uptight office worker who decides on a whim that she's gonna have a one-night stand. And so it's one of these kind of walk and talk before sunrise type of films, and she meets an NHL player, and they kind of tour around Toronto late at night, and it hits up a lot of spots that people will probably find familiar. And so it's totally rooted in Toronto, and in a nice way. You know, I love Toronto at night, and really shows it in that film.
Mm-hmm. Overall, what does it mean for you seeing the growth of the festival since you started with The Real Asian in 2005?
I mean, it means a lot. It's to see the community growing, to see it sustaining. It's not, you know, because I'm in it, in the festival planning, I know how hard it is to get anything done and to pull it off. And it takes a lot of dedication from the staff. And we have just such a great staff. And, you know, to see that momentum build and hopefully, you know, it is something that people come to Real Asian, enjoy themselves, you know, have something that they thought about in a new way, something they've never seen before. I think that's what Real Asian has always been about, whether we were very small in 2005 or, you know, a little bit bigger like we are now. The community experience is always the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, are there any other final thoughts you'd like to add?
Yeah, I wanted to mention too, in terms of Toronto-based projects, is Romeo Candido's Top Line. This is a web series that was that premiered earlier on CBC Gem this year, but it has some really and we're showing it as our closing night presentation with live singing, because it's all about the music industry in Toronto. So that's a really place-based well, it's a web series, but a place-based feature entity. So we're really excited about that. And I guess, you know, I think more than anything is just, I hope people, again, find something that resonates with them. We have a really large community to say Asian Canadian. What does that mean? And I think, you know, audiences who come, no matter where you're from, I hope that it becomes a home in some small way. There's a lot of work to do to make that a place where it's welcoming to everybody. But that's kind of the goal, the endeavor.
That was Aram Collier, Artistic Director for Real Asian. The festival is running until November 20th and closes with a screening of Romeo Candido's Top Line at the Isabel Bader Theater. All features and shorts are available online until the 20th. I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative,